This is Seattle's Morning News. Ken Langone is the co-founder of Home Depot, but he is also an unrepentant capitalist who has now written a book which is unabashedly titled I Love Capitalism, An American Story. And it's the story of your success. But why did you feel the need to write a book like this at this moment? It sounds like you feel capitalism needs defending.
I was encouraged about 3 or 4 years ago to write a book that the fellow said, who knows the publishing industry, said, you know, you got a story here. And I said, nah, I'm not interested. And I sort of put it in the back of my mind. And then in the campaign of 16, early on, I noticed all these kids, literally children, 17, 18, 20, 21, gravitating to Bernie Sanders.
Uh-huh.
And it frightened me.
Why?
Absolutely. Because if kids are going to give up before they even start, what's left?
Well, what do you mean by kids giving up?
Well, because they were going to follow Bernie's preachings. What were they? Get this from the government, get this from the government, get this from the government, get all this stuff from the government, and you haven't got to do anything. Because that's where this is going to be la-la land. This is going to be the promised land. It's not. Capitalism works. Look at what a kid like me of extremely limited ability, no net worth to speak of at all, other than what I could make a few bucks here and a few bucks there as a kid. I had the most wonderful parents in the world. They loved me. They gave me unconditional love. We always had a warm house, and we always had plenty of good food on the table. Not lavish food, but good food. And I didn't realize, you know, we didn't have anything. My parents lived from paycheck to paycheck. They both had to work, mom in a school cafeteria. My father is a plumber. Guess what? If I can do it, the system works, and it works for everybody. Look at this country. With all of our social ills, look at us. Look at us compared to the rest of the world. Look at our educational system, apart from public education. Look at our universities. Where did all that come from? It came from people who won in a capitalistic system and decided to share their good fortune, whether it's through a hospital or a museum or a library or a university, you name it. This is how it happens.
Yeah. Well, Bernie Sanders didn't win, but Donald Trump did, in part because of the votes of people who apparently felt that the system didn't help them. Weren't they complaining about stagnant wages and the fact that their jobs were disappearing, going overseas?
Oh, I think they have a right to complain about a lot of things. You raise a very good point. The issue to me, equate Trump to a fever. Now, what is a fever? A fever tells you something's wrong with you. An infection or something else. There's something in your body that's going on that's creating the fever. The fever is the symptom, not the cause. Nobody took a step back after Election Day in 16 and said, what's the message? The message is the American people are fed up with their government and their leaders. They're fed up with them. They did what was perceived to be a draconian thing. 7 o'clock election night, you wouldn't have thought for a minute, Dave, that Trump was going to win that election. Well,
yeah.
Guess what? He did.
Right. As somebody who's succeeded spectacularly, Ken, talk to those people who, whether they voted for Bernie Sanders, because there's, when I went to New Hampshire, I found that there was a lot in common between the Bernie voters and the Trump voters. They were both, I don't think Bernie was talking about getting rid of capitalism, even though he calls himself a socialist. I think he was appealing to people who felt like they were on the losing end of this system and didn't think they deserved
it. But what he was promising could only lead to socialism, because you're not going to be able to afford all the things he wants to do unless you make it so repressive for capitalism to work. And that's what happens. If you put a burden big enough on any society or any system, it'll crack.
Yeah.
Capitalism.
Okay, so address the people who are desperate enough to risk ruining this great system we have and feel that they have lost the game.
That's my point. And they all missed the boat. Every one of them, Trump, for whatever reason, I don't know whether he knew what he was doing or not, but he hit a nerve. He hit a nerve, and guess what? The American people spoke.
Yeah.
Go look at the counties. It's interesting that they talk about her winning the popular vote. Go look at the map and look at the counties across America. This was widespread.
No, I know that.
You take out
what happens to those people who put their trust in him? What can he do to elevate their lives?
By the way, by virtue of better, the economics of the situation look better than they were. I feel I got my vote's worth with one simple thing. Bringing those three men home from Korea the other day was worth it. Nobody else did it. Nobody else could do it. But he did it. How he did it or what reaction? The other thing is everybody talks, oh, no, you want to have diplomacy work first before you try weapons. Isn't it smart, therefore, if that's the case, that this summit at least gives us a chance of something happening?
Yeah,
diplomacy?
I don't know of anybody who's against what he's doing in North Korea. I think that's he's got support
there.
A lot
of people,
Charles Schumer supported him on the embassy in Jerusalem. But I'm talking about the people. I mean, we have this homelessness problem in Seattle, right? So Amazon is this big
success. We have it all over America.
All over America.
In New York.
Exactly. All right. So I don't have to tell you about the Seattle example. So tell me what you do about that. That is the number one issue in Seattle right now, is what do we do about the decrepit campers and people camping under the expressways?
Okay, how about the number of people that are homeless that want to live homeless, but because now we have interpretations of laws that says if somebody wants to live homeless, they have a right to live homeless. Years past, you'd pick them up and say, you want to live homeless, but you're not. We're going to take you to a shelter. I'm not saying there's that much of that. I'm exaggerating, I guess you could say. What I'm saying to you is we have to go ask back to the cause. What's the cause of homelessness? Part of it is people just giving up. Part of it being people who don't have the energy necessary to just hold a simple job.
Yeah.
I know this much. There's an incredible shortage of people in this city for jobs that pay fairly well. I'm talking about New York City.
Yeah.
Guess what? But I don't like the idea that somebody who is mentally ill is capable of making his own decision to live on a grate in January in New York City when it's 5 below zero or it's 10 above zero, whatever it is. But you can't pick them up anymore because that's their civil right.
Well, I think part of the reason you can't pick them up is there's no place to put them. I mean, that's the problem here.
Well,
we don't have any mental institutions.
We have places in New York. I don't know if I want to go there, but we have places in New York where we'll take them and we'll find a place for them to go.
So is it your feeling that basically, the government is doing too much for people like that, or that we're doing enough, or, you know, what?
Let me put it to you this way. The government helping a lot of people does not come cost-free to the people who are receiving the help. A person who has the satisfaction of, if they're capable of helping themselves, has a sense of self-respect and self-worth that can't be developed if all they do is go to a place every week and get food or go to a place every week and pick up a check.
Agreed.
And they've done nothing for it.
Agreed. I don't know of anybody who would choose to take welfare if they didn't have to. What I find is...
Well, a lot of people do.
Apparently, but that means they must not have the motivation. And I can't figure out what the magic sauce is that takes an unmotivated person and suddenly motivates them. Not everybody's motivated by money, apparently.
Well, guess what? If they are motivated, and what you're going to do is not make them more motivated, then that means you're making them less motivated. There were people I've seen on television interviews that say, why should I go to work? I have to buy gas in my car. I got to pay taxes. I sit home. I get this. I get a free phone. I get that. It's a practical mathematical conclusion. We don't look, no American, not one God blessed American should go to bed hungry. Not one.
Mm-hmm.
Not one American should be turned away for health care because they haven't got the money to pay for it. And you want to know the truth? Any place in America, you can get taken into an emergency room in any hospital, in any city or any town in America, and they don't say the guy's bleeding to death from a gunshot wound or a car accident. They don't say, oh, no, you haven't got any insurance, you got to leave. That's nonsense. It doesn't happen.
No, it's illegal.
We're a lot more humane than that.
Well, but if you have chronic cancer, though, and you haven't got the money, they will say, we can't treat you. That's still legal.
Well, let me say this to you. We have to decide. This is a social issue. We have to decide how much of a burden do we want to put on a system to help somebody live maybe 3 more months. I mean, I don't want to sound callous, but and I thank God I'm healthy. But how much they tell you in medical and clinical tests that if a drug is beneficial for 3 months, it's therapeutically significant.
Yeah.
3 months, and it's a $30,000 drug. I'm not saying we should say, oh, you got to go let the Indian go out behind a tree and die. Look, we have to always be a humane society. We always have to be a society that respects and holds to the highest human condition, the human being. The human being is in the whole order of creation. We're it. That's where we should all bow.
So
we should do everything we can to respect the dignity of the human being.
Well, let me ask you then, since you brought up healthcare, should rich and poor be treated alike when it comes to healthcare, regardless of income?
Absolutely.
Really? Because that's
absolutely
socialist as it gets, isn't it?
NYU Langone took over a hospital in Brooklyn in a terribly depressed area. Mm-hmm. And we're hell-bent on making sure that the people that go to that hospital get the same quality care as they come to our main campus. Absolutely. Now, does that create economic challenges? You bet it does. But this is where entrepreneurship should help. The government doesn't solve problems. The government, most times, makes problems bigger than they were before they got. Look at the VA.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the VA.
Well, since that center has your name on it, you've made a commitment to making sure that rich and poor are treated alike. But you alone.
Absolutely.
But you can't. I mean, I guess you're saying everybody who has wealth as you do should be doing that, and that the government.
Let me say this to you. I don't tell anybody else. It's not my right, nor I think it's seemly for me to tell somebody else what to do with their wealth. That's their business. I know in my case, I feel a great moral obligation to share my good fortune.
Right.
And frankly, very frankly, Dave, I've gotten more out of what I've given than what I gave. Whether it's a better sense of self-respect, whether it's self-worth, whatever it is, I feel I'm ahead by my philanthropy.
And I really admire that. What I'm saying is Langone Medical Center can't take everybody who needs that treatment. So what happens to the others?
Well, depends on where you are.
Yeah.
We have a beautiful city hospital here in Bellevue Hospital with superb care. I know that because our doctors at NYU are the same doctors that staff Bellevue. They're the same doctors that staff the VA hospital here in Manhattan. And look at the VA hospital here in Manhattan. None of the scandal involving the other VA hospitals all over. Not here. Not here at all.
So then,
the private sector works. We take public education. We have a crisis of public education in America.
Yes.
We better fix it, or that's going to be our undoing, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, no, I like the idea of trying charter schools, so I've no problem with that.
Well, I'm very passionate. I'm very much involved in a charter school up in Harlem, Harlem Children's Zone Promise Academy. Jeff Canada created Harlem Children's Zone, and I was chairman of the school for 10 years. I want to tell you, it's one of the greatest satisfactions of my life to see these kids, all from challenged, economically challenged environments. They're flying. They're doing great. They're getting good grades. They're all going to college, every one of them. And they're graduating from college. It can happen, but we got to fix the system.
So there's a guy who is living in a camper up where I park, not far from the station here. If I hand him a copy of your book, I Love Capitalism, and he reads it, you think he could pull himself up?
I hope he does, because that's why I wrote it.
That's what I figured.
I hope he does, because, look, Dave, if you knew me, I'm not the most intellectually gifted person you'll ever know. I'll kill you with hard work, and I'll kill you with energy.
That's right.
But I'm not especially gifted intellectually. But, Dave, it's amazing what you can accomplish if you set your mind to it. And I did get a good education. I did get a good, in spite of the fact that I'm not intellectually gifted, I did get a good education. And I had parents that taught me wonderful values. My mother ever used to say to me, and it's in the book, the stories of riding through the wealthy, what I call the wealthy section, would you like to live there someday? I said, yes, you will. You're going to have to work hard and get an education. That was the two things I remembered. And I got an education. Bucknell was, why do I support Bucknell like I do? Because of what it did for me. Read the story in the book. NYU, I went to school there at night. Look at what it did for me. I have a moral obligation to support those places. They were there for me when I needed them, and now I've got to be there for them to help somebody else. That's the common good.
Well, I admire you for taking on that responsibility. And I was going to ask you
if
you.
I think it's an obligation.
Well, I know, but you don't want to. Are there other captains of industry who are not doing their part? And if they all did, would all?
I don't have any right to make that judgment. I don't have any right to make that judgment.
Okay.
I don't have what somebody else is theirs. That's a society we live in. We tax everybody. What's left is yours. You do what you want with it. I don't have any right to judge anybody else by their philanthropic activities. I know in my case, and my wife feels the same way I do, we have a moral obligation because, Dave, I'm not self-made. Hundreds of people, and I made it an effort in the book. I'm sure I left names out. But if you go to the acknowledgement section of the book, you'll see lists of names of people. These are all the people that I can remember all through my life that were there for me, that helped me get on my journey.
And that's good that you acknowledge that. But you say it's a moral obligation. You're not passing judgment. I'm going to try to reconcile that. But let me ask you this question then. If everyone of your wealth stepped up and did what you do, would there even be a need for government welfare programs?
Depends on the size of the welfare programs. I know right now the politicians are all cowards because until you realize 70% of the federal budget, 72% to be exact, goes to entitlements. That means it's locked in. They can't do so. You got to figure out how to manage the government with 28% of the budget. Can't do it. We are. This is generational theft. I tell people. I say to a guy, okay, a wealthy guy like me, I say I shouldn't get Social Security. He's no, it's my money. I'm getting it back. I said, let me ask a question. You're on an island with your grandson. You got one portion of food left, and there's nothing else to eat. Do you eat it, or do you give it to your grandson? He said, oh, I give it to my grandson.
Yeah.
I said, so your motives are right. Do you realize what you're doing by taking these checks? That kid, that grandson of yours, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, 40 years from now, he's going to be paying the bills to pay for us for the portion of food that we took.
The wealthy are perfectly free to donate their Social Security check back to the government.
No, I donate it to charity every month. Well, whatever, I never cash a Social Security check. I endorse it to a charity every month.
That's good.
And my wife does the same thing.
No, that's good. But so you can't say whether if everyone behaved as you do, we could get rid of, if not all government welfare. I mean, the entitlements you talk about are Social Security and Medicare, which a lot of people really need at that age.
And they should have it. I don't say you should take it away from them. But take it away from me. I don't need it. I shouldn't get it. I won. I won huge.
I can't debate you there either. I can't debate you on most of this stuff.
Well, but that's why you're talking to me. If I was a flop, you wouldn't have me on your show.
Of course not.
Okay. So, look, I'm being practical. I can't, God forbid, if we get social unrest in America, it's going to hurt me like everybody else.
Exactly. That's the compact we make. You get to be as wealthy as you want, but the trade-off is you got to at least keep the people who lose the game fed and sheltered, or at some point they're going to get really angry and pick up pitchforks.
Dave, in its entire history, Bernie, Arthur, Pat, and I made sure we never, ever, ever hired one person at Home Depot for minimum wage. Hmm. We always paid above minimum wage by a good margin. We have a simple, practical reason. We want the best people we can get, and we're going to pay for them.
Right.
And we got them. Go to a Home Depot store and tell me how good the service is. Tell me about their attitudes. We've got health insurance. We've got all kinds of savings plans. Best part of the Home Depot story, we have 3,000 kids that started with us in the parking lot, pushing carts in. They're multimillionaires today, and they're still working with us.
That's great.
That's capitalism. It works.
Well, I need to be talking to the guys who are not running their businesses that way so I can rip them
a new
one.
all I know is if you look at our success, you have to say, hey, guys, if it ended up that way, maybe we might want to try it that way too.
That's right.
I know the most precious asset Home Depot has is its 400,000 associates that put the aprons on every day. They're our secret sauce. They're not so secret anymore. They're it.
Yeah.
They're the magic bullet.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, what you're saying is that the way you do business is the way to make money. And therefore, everybody
should.
Well, that's it. So these problems of low wages, of people being exploited, all the complaints you hear about, that shouldn't exist because presumably the businesses who conduct their business that way wouldn't make a profit and would disappear.
You got two great companies out there in your city. You got Amazon and you got Starbucks. There's more out there. I used to have a big investment in a company called Immunex out there, which is now yes. part of Amgen. You got those two companies. They're models of how to take care of your people, both of them. Howard Schultz and Jeff Bezos, these guys do a first-class job of making sure that everybody comes to the party with them. And Boeing's another one. I know Jim McNerney very well, the guy, the last chairman. Wonderful job he did. But Boeing is a good example.
You want to give an opinion on that head tax that the city of Seattle just passed on?
It's dumb. You're encouraging people to move. That helps nobody. Figure a way out to grow the pie.
Well, Amazon.
Why?
Could,
why?
If Jeff Bezos and Howard Schultz and the others, built some low-income housing along the way, which they could probably do more effectively than the government could, that would diffuse the whole thing.
Wait a minute. Remember this: people that invested in Amazon or Starbucks, first and foremost, expected if they bought the stock, they would go to a higher price if they wanted to sell it. You don't buy stocks to go down, you buy stocks to go up.
Right.
Their first obligation is to make sure the business... Look at what happened in Rochester, New York, when Eastman Kodak went under. Rochester is now a depressed area. Why? Because Kodak was the linchpin of the whole thing. These guys, their first job, Howard and Jeff, both cases, their first job is to make sure their businesses are thriving.
Which
and
they
by
are.
By the way, both those people... I think, and I'm proud to know both of them, both those people do more than their share to give back to society, as a company and as individuals. God bless people like that.
So one more thing. Answer the argument which came up in the city council, and the argument goes like this. Jeff Bezos is practically the wealthiest man in the world. The idea that he can't afford, I guess it's $275 a head. They reduced it from $500. If he can't afford that, give me a break. Of course he can easily afford that. What do you say to that?
They're missing the point. Make government more efficient, and I'll make a bet. I think I can go to Seattle, and I bet I can find 20 different ways, if I spent the time, to make the government more efficient, to generate more revenues than the taxes they're going to get from this deal.
How soon can you come here?
I love Seattle. I was invited out to the wonderful Catholic school, University of Seattle. I was very, very
impressed. Seattle University.
I got a lot of friends in Seattle. Seattle's a wonderful, very, very progressive town. It's an exciting place, and I think the world of Seattle. And I think the world. I got a goddaughter that lives in Seattle. By the way, her father ran a company called Fraser Capital, a big venture capitalist, Alan Fraser. Uh-huh. And he was previously the CFO of Immunex. That's where I knew him from. And my goddaughter, Joanna, good people. And Seattle's a great place.
Alan Fraser of St. Monica's Catholic Church?
I believe so.
I was on the school commission with him, if it's the same person.
Well, he's a hell of a guy. Well, you know him then.
Yeah.
He's a first-class human being. And I'm proud and honored to call him my friend.
Well, we have to wrap up here, I'm being told, so...
Okay, well, thank you so much for putting up with me, and I hope we meet sometime.
Ken Langone is the author of I Love Capitalism, an American Story. Ken, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.